to Hiram Saeed with From Heartache to Joy and Bliss Up Now. Very excited to be introducing someone who is brand new to our show, but not really brand new to our community, because if you have watched our groundbreaking docuseries, Energy, the Ultimate Healer, then you would already be familiar with Frances Rico, who is our special guest speaker today. We are going to talk to Frances about practical magic. Step into the real of expansive possibilities and create alternatives. A very, very exciting topic. We are going to be learning from Frances how you can discover that you are an innately magical being. Realms of magic and miracles surround us, but we don't see them until we do. Let's learn how we can do that. Learn how to tap into creation's irresistible flow of resources, inspiration, well-being, and abundance. The gift of you is not special. You are essential. I love that. Experience a simple practice that you can do to change the reality that surrounds you in positive, life-affirming ways. Frances Rico apprenticed with his grandfather, Pedro Angel Fernandez, a Miquito shaman. From this early start as a seer, his life has followed pathways of indigenous wisdom traditions. Frances works with youth, with spiritual seekers, and shamanic practitioners. He also leads groups on journeys to the temples of Teo, Mexico, to Machu Picchu and the Sacred Valley in Peru, as well as to the Montana Beartooth Mountains and into the Pueblo traditions of New Mexico. He teaches globally and has a private shamanic practice. I am so excited that we will be talking to Frances today, and he has a couple of really, really interesting and exciting practices for you guys today. So we're going to be doing some clearing, some healing practices. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I can tell you guys that this call, be prepared, this call is going to be a little bit different from what we typically do, and I know that it is going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to learn a lot. So, Frances, welcome to the show, my friend. It's so wonderful to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm very happy to have everyone here with us.
Yes, and I am very happy to have you with us, because I remember when we were producing the docuseries, that was one of the things I really wanted to do, was to get you on the show so that, you know, we could really introduce our audience deeper with your work and what it is you do. So for some of our audience members that may not be aware, what exactly is a shaman and how does one become a shaman and a seer?
Well, we have in our English language that we're speaking presently, it's a noun subject object based language. So that word shaman has become like a noun, like doctor, lawyer, that kind of thing. But actually, the word shaman is a verb. And the verb is, it means vibrating. It's not a thing. It is an action. And it's really hard for us. So when someone calls himself a shaman, they say, I'm a shaman, unless they follow up immediately by saying, and by the way, we're all shamans because we're all alive. We're all capable. We all are gifted. We all are life in motion. We all are, you know, we're all essential to life. So a shaman would know that. You can call somebody a shaman, and there is the stories, like I call my grandfather a shaman. He came from that era of the shamanic view of the world was of an ordinary reality and a non-ordinary reality. And so he was someone who was capable of going back and forth. And traditionally, the shaman's role is to go from ordinary reality, where the problems are, into non-ordinary reality, where the medicines are, the solutions are, the advice, the insight, the creatures that are offering their, you know, their prowess and their abilities. So that was what he was able to do. But it's an action. And early on in cultural anthropology, as it was developing as a science, people that did what I do and what the world of shamans do were called witch doctors, and because psychology was brand new at that point too, they were called psychotic, because the idea of leaving this reality for another reality seemed to be a break rather than there being a continuum. What we know now, Irem, is that there is not a normal reality and a non-ordinary reality. There's multiple. It's a multiplicity of realities, and it's very fluid and very flexible. And that is the realm of that realm of fluidity is a magical realm, and we all have access to it.
Would you call it the quantum realm?
Well, you know, perhaps this is a realm. This is a very good point. We are now at a time where the leading edges of science in quantum physics, in astrophysics, and in neurobiology, all are speaking the language of shamanism. There's, like, as an example, mm-hmm. with quantum physics, we contend, a shamanic point of view is that there is no objective reality because there are no objects. Well, that's the quantum world. Where,
that exactly is. Yes.
Yeah. We are energy. and instead of our language defining us as objects, like I am so and so and I am a this, instead of those kind of definitions of ourselves, in the quantum realm, we are energy beings and we are life, we are fluid, we are life in motion. I think that's one of the things that your documentary Energy, the Ultimate Healer really brought out, is healing, energy healing, is so natural because we are energy. But magic is natural because we are magical, and we are in that
magical
energetic realm. Yeah, we are magical beings. But I'd also like to be able to share an experience of that. But my grandfather was the inspiration for me. This was at the end of World War II. My family was Spanish, and they had been in the Philippines. And they came after. They had been in a prisoner of war camp there. But because the Spanish were allies with the Japanese, it was a prisoner of war camp. And because my grandfather was a leader, instead of killing him, they beat him and detached his retina, so he became blind. And it was terrible, but this was an era well before seeing eye dogs. So I became a seeing eye boy, and I was the one that would help my grandfather. My mother had had me when she was 16, coming to the United States, and she was just like this, you know, naive, delicate, little beautiful flower of a girl, who didn't really fit in because as a Hispanic in Southern California, Hispanics were second-class citizens. They were the servant class. And that shocked her, because she had thought of America as being just the land of, you know. And also in the Philippines, the Spanish were royalty, and that's the way that they saw themselves. So it was a shock for her. And she had never had any experience with the Catalina Islands, where the family settled. And that was like Las Vegas of the day. The soldiers and the sailors would all go the 26 miles across the sea to Catalina Island, where the big bands would play at the Avalon Ballroom and other ballrooms. And people that lived on the island, a lot of the work that was done was in service of this big entertainment industry that happened there. But for my mom, a young teenage girl there, she had never had any experience, I'm pretty certain, with fruit punch spiked with vodka, you know. And she was, whereas a couple of her other sisters fit right into and were snap, crackle, and pop, and they fit right into society there. She never did. She was like a little hibiscus flower. And so to have me at 16 was in a Catholic family was a real shock. But I was raised by my grandparents, because children raising children doesn't work. And she was sort of more of a sister at that point. So my grandfather was an extremely important person in my life. And to be able to walk him to his jobs, what he would do is he would move into an energy field. I'll give you an example. We would get a call, Pedro, there's a demon there is a demon in the chicken coop, and it's terrorizing the chickens. And at that time, you know, there were no Safeways or Whole Foods or supermarkets. People traded things, like this family traded the eggs from their chickens for produce and for everything else that they needed, perhaps even a little cash. So we go into the chicken coop. I take them on Catalina Island. It's all little paths. It's not hard to get around. I take them to where the family is and where the chicken coop is. And it's one of those long structures with 10 coops inside of a building with an access to the outside and the inside. And we go in, and the chickens, I don't know how many of us have ever raised chickens, but they're wonderful creatures, but they're also part dinosaur. And their eyes were pinning. They were hysterical. The chickens were like in a frenzy, and they weren't eating, and they weren't drinking, and they weren't laying eggs, and the family was rightfully very, very concerned. And my grandfather starts to tone, and he makes some motion with his hands, like he's stirring the energy. And he asked me, Rico, like I'm maybe 4 years old at this point, Rico, tell me what you see. And I said, Grandpa, it's very scary. The energy is, the colors are ugly. They're scary red. It looks like blood. And he keeps toning, making some sounds, gentle sounds, and stirring. His hand is making a stirring motion. And the chickens, their eyes are pinning, and they're extremely frightened of us. And there's like 10 coops, and all the chickens are hysterical. But the light starts to change, and he says, Rico, now. And I tell him, well, it's starting to become almost pink. And at this point, the chickens are kind of going like, they're looking around at each other like, hey, look, we have water, we have food. And then the room becomes rosy pink. And my grandfather says, go to the very last coop and get the little black and white hen that's hiding. And I don't know, those of you that have had chickens, you know this is disgusting. You know, they used burlap bags in those days. That's how they cared for the chickens. They all nested in burlap, and the burlap would rot, and it would have chicken poop on it, of course. And I went to that very last coop, 10 coops, and reached around looking for her. Back to my grandfather. Grandfather, there is no little black and white hen. Rico, you go back and find her. So I would go back and crawl underneath the burlap, and I found a little black and white hen who had a little bloody scratch on her neck. And the other chickens, of course, had been scrambling out of the way. Well, chicken wire in those days was made by hand. It was like braided. And whenever the wire ended, there would be a little spike. And so she had stuck her head through the chicken wire to get the grass on the other side of the fence, which, as we all know, is always better. And she pulled her head back. She pulled her head back and scratched her neck. And one of the other chickens saw the blood and hit her. And she ran in and hid. Well, so in her coop, one of the chickens said, there's something wrong. There's something really, really wrong here. And then the other chickens in the next coop said, what? There's something wrong in your coop? What's going on? This is scary. And the hysteria went from chicken to chicken to chicken. And it lasted 2.5 days before the family panicked and said, you know what? Our chickens are going to die if they don't eat and drink at a certain point. So now I brought the little black and white hen to my grandfather. We took her outside. The family had two little girls. We gave the hen to the girls and said, feed her separately, sing songs to her for 10 days, and then she can go back into her coop. The next morning we get a call. Mm-hmm. Pedro, we have eggs. Eggs for the rest of the summer. And
that's a beautiful story.
Well, the coaching that he gave me, and this is what most of us don't get, some of us do, is that neurologically, at that early stage in our lives, we begin to neurally prune our neural pathways that see what is the whole field of energy gets reduced to the object. Like, that's a chicken, that's an egg, that's a dog, that's a tree. Yeah. And we no longer see the energy fields around it as we start to objectify our experience. The magical realm is the realm that's being called by science check this out. This is so crazy. They're doing studies on all this right now, and they're calling it blur. So when your eyes track a word, you're focusing on the word on the page you're reading, maybe 20% of the time. The rest of the time is blur as your eyes are moving around and you're in a room. Well, energy happens in what we call blur because our minds and our neurosystems have locked down our vision to seeing only the objective reality. So we think that we're physical beings because that's what we see. And this is where quantum physicists come in and say, the rocks are not objects. They're energy fields, and they're ancient ones. Mm-hmm. And you can speak to rocks. You can connect with them. That's a magical thought, that a rock would communicate with you. It's also a magical thought that you could communicate with animals and that they would have things to share with you. Mm-hmm. So,
but it's really not. It's, if you look at it, it should have been quite natural and normal for us.
Well, and there is the great gift that it is natural and normal for us, but it has been overlaid by a contraction or a structure that has actually restricted and contracted our own neurological plasticity, our own capacity to be someone who speaks with rocks. And I think this what you've identified is called domestication, where you begin to find out and your parents tell you and then your teachers and then everyone agrees on consensual reality. But from the shamanic perspective, this field of radiance that is you, that is each of us, and the gift of being able to see that my grandfather gave to me was a gift of seeing the beauty. The gift is not that I'm gifted. The gift is that I have the gift of seeing the radiance and beauty of everything that I look at, because I'm seeing
that is
what's
so beautiful.
Called, it's the rainbow body. That's what we call it in
rainbow
our
body.
Rainbow body. You have a rainbow body of iridescent energy that is sparkling and flowing around you. And occasionally, of course, there can be a hitch in the giddy up of your energy, and there can be a contraction, and there can be a place where energy is struggling and not moving, an injury, or there can be a place where stress has caused wear and tear in your fluidity. So there is an area that has an obstruction. And this is the most ancient shamanic vision of healing, and that is to restore flow. To restore the flow energy.
I love everything that you were saying, and I'm moved to share this. Do you prefer to be called Francis or Rico?
Francis is fine. Francis, Rico. Francis is good.
I was going to say I'm moved to share this, Francis, that it's so interesting that what you were describing. I've been studying lately this. I really am inspired by the Sufi culture of the East, and I consider myself a Sufi too. So there was a Sufi saint or teacher, you can say, many hundreds of years ago, who wrote the theory of illumination. And the summarized version is that there is no object in the universe, and that everything is light, and that, you know, God, source energy, is the light of lights, and everything emanates from that and basically is just a reflection or expression. All of manifestation is a gradient expression of that light. So kind of like what, you know, these ancient people have been talking about, these truths, like the shamans, the Sufis, the sadhus, those people, and they were all talking about the same thing. And I was moved to share one more thing that I have never shared on this show before. But because you were talking about your grandfather, I want to talk about my grandfather, who was a Sufi, and then none of his children were. So I never met him. He died way before my birth. But he had the ability to this was a time of partition between India and Pakistan. So there was a lot of, you know, riots and stuff. So there used to be curfew of the British forces, of the British Army. And he was the person who does the prayer call in the mosque. So five times a day, he had to go to the mosque. He had to walk to the mosque to do the prayer call. but then there would be the curfew timings, and every time his wife would tell him, please don't go. They have orders to basically, you know, shoot on sight.
Yes,
and he would walk. So this is because you had mentioned your grandfather could move between realities. So he would walk right in front of them, and they would never see him. They would every time they heard the prayer call, they would just be like, how did he do it again? We were right in front of his house. How did he do it? They could not see him. He would be right in front of them, and they couldn't see him. And this, you know, unfortunately, none of the children followed the father's tradition. So by the time I found out about my grandfather, I was already a teenager, and it fascinated me. Like, how did he do that? How did he do that? And, of course, now after years and years of, you know, running this telesummit and talking to so many wise people like yourself and studying, you know, the quantum science, of course, now I've begun to understand it. But this is stuff that is, it seems so magical, but it's real and it's possible. And, you know, so I love what you shared. I want to honor your story. I'm so honored that you shared it with us. It's absolutely beautiful. And what a wonderful training you had, you know, just growing up with your grandfather who shared his gifts with you so freely.
I was being helpful as a seeing eye boy, you know, before mm-hmm. the era of seeing eye dogs. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, his coaching is the same thing. His coaching of me is the same thing that's available to all of us. We all have innate gifts. We are so remarkably gifted. For me to be able to see the energy, so I know your grandfather, and I know what he did and how he did it and what he was. He was so fluid in his light-based being that he was actually able as a radiant being to shift his field so that a little breeze of light went by that they couldn't even see. They no longer saw him as an object walking past that they should shoot. He was a wisp of intelligence light that was moving to call people to prayer. He was standing in holiness. And so this place now, it's very interesting because science would look at him and say, well, your grandfather was a polymorphic crystal because his lattice structures, the structures of his bones and sinews and connective tissue are all organized in a way that generates light that is called biophotonic light. So our bodies generate light, and we are light. We're a light field that's the rainbow body, but we also generate light. And they do functional MRIs of people like your grandfather, my grandfather, and see that their brains light up with different prayers, different thoughts, meditation, that the way that they can shift what we call reality, ordinary reality, in non-ordinary ways. So they're also, you know, Irem, this is really interesting. They're studying, they're finding out about this and calling this body of light the tensegrity body. That's a Buckminster Fuller word. Mm-hmm. They stole it from him because he was a genius who would take English and try to make it more responsive. So he took tensional integrity and called it tensegrity. And that's the name of a light-based body that has a response to everything. We are all touching each other in light all the time, but we don't see it.
Yes.
Until we begin to see
it. Yes. Oh, my God. I can talk to you about so many things, so many theories I have, which I would love to discuss with you maybe on another show or maybe privately later. But I was shocked to see one of your statements because this is a view that I hold really strongly. And don't ask me how, but, you know, I just sense things. And so this statement of yours holds so true for me, and I just know that it's true. But I would love to hear how you arrived at this conclusion, of course, with the background that you have. So your view is that women's empowerment is the key to restoring sanity and wellness to our world. So I would love to hear your point of view on this when currently, obviously, the world is dominated and run by this very exploitative dominator system. How did you arrive at this conclusion?
Yeah, this system that really is at the end of its ability to exploit because it has exploited things to the point where we are at a evolutionary choice moment for all of us. How I came to this is I began more deeply researching from my experience with my grandfather. At a certain point, my mother found, when she became like a young woman, she found the military war hero man of her dreams and married him. It turned out to be like, you know, your classic military triple aggressive alpha style man. So I went into hiding, and instead of being a little seer, I had my grandfather's guitar and became a musician. And then as I got older and this tugging, I kept seeing things out of the corner of my eye. I had escaped into music, of course, but I began to research. I thought I was researching shamanism, and I visited the Inuits in Alaska and the Mapuches in southern Chile and all points in between, trying to meet these old people to see what their view of the old shamans of. And what I began to discover was a couple of things. One was that there was a central university that was part of the Americas called Teotihuacan. So I began to be interested in that. Mm-hmm. And one, I discovered that the field of shamanism was evidence of a matrilineal feminine intelligence field that had to do with women caring for women and having children, and then the children as they began to grow, and then the children as they began to have families also. The whole cycle of life and the wisdom of caring for people in the cycle of life, not just with the physical, just having the baby, but also the emotional and the mental and the relationships and everything, that shamanism was a profoundly feminine field of intelligence. And as I began to realize this and look around, this is maybe 10, 12 years ago that really the realization crystallized for me, I began to see that creation's attempts to bring sanity and respect and coherence and wellness to our planet through really well-intentioned carriers of the divine wisdom who would say things like, love each other, care for each other, we're brothers and sisters, all of us. People held these statements in high regard, but they didn't live them. They didn't live them at all. And now what I saw happening was I saw intelligent, it's a movement from the linearity of the masculine modality of get the job done, to a vortex cycle based, the cycle movement, a vortexian energy. And what I began to see is that creation was betting that the irresistibility of beauty, creation's language is beauty, and the irresistibility of feminine beauty carrying the messages of coherence and respect and collaboration and cooperation and communion and caring and compassion, that the feminine beauty articulating. And so you know, I saw you coming, right, because of this. And there she is, you know, there you were. And there are so many bright, beautiful, radiant women that are showing us that life is worth living, that life is worth caring for, that this is the feminine intelligence that's operating now. And, you know, it's operating in the context of multiple overlapping emergencies that are our previous system of exploitation, predation, and domination of resources has brought us to. In the face of these emergencies that are on our planet, environmental, the nuclear issue of, you know, nuclear weapons on a hair trigger, war itself, and we have the resources, of course, to create heaven on earth. And I see the feminine intelligence operating here, emerging. So in the face of the emergencies that face us, women are emerging now. They're flowering. And this is the most important thing to me, and why I do what I do and why I work, because what's important is to encourage and support the emergence of the most agile, creative, resourceful, and responsive beings, and leading the way are women. And I think it's creation's best bet on addressing
that. That is beautiful. I love that. I absolutely love that.
But you can really see how this is this is the reality, right? You can see it.
It is. It is. I can see it. I can sense it. I've been saying it for a few years. I'm very passionate about helping empower the Muslim women, because that's where I come from. And because I strongly feel, since we are all connected and our energies are touching each other, that there's billions, you know, there's billions of Muslims, and you're talking about billions of women that are oppressed. The world cannot move into balance until we also heal that, you know, part of humanity. So I'm doing my small part in that, whatever I can. And it's absolutely a joy to be able to serve all these wonderful people and, of course, this community. I you know, you won't believe it, but it's already been 30 minutes into the call. And I know that you had told me that you wanted to actually do a process right in the beginning. We kind of forgot that. So if you want to do that now, and then 30 minutes, in about 20 minutes, you want to do another process. So if you want to tell our listeners what we're going to be experiencing, I'll put myself on mute, and then just let me know when you're ready to talk again, and I'll unmute myself.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Well, this is an invitation to see how simple that innate magical being that you are, how simple it is to bring that part of yourself present and to become resourceful and creative with and agile with this part of yourself. So let's slip out of the language we've been speaking, as interesting as it is, and let's open our eyes and our minds and our hearts. Let's start with that. And together we're going to become spirited and agile and feral and resourceful together. As best we can, we're speaking truth, beauty, wisdom, and wild poetry with each other. Healing is so essential. Healing ourselves and our families, our friends, healing our world. And for me, and I'm certain for you, that enjoying life and love and peace and abundance is the core of why life is worth living and why care, because we can live together in peace and there is abundance aplenty, as you are about to experience. And I think our purpose being here is to give our unique essential gifts to the world. So let's start by checking in with how you are feeling right in this moment. We store so much tension and so much of the contraction of domestication and our beliefs and the fear-based system that we live in. The predatory dominator culture stays in place by intimidation. So let's address the reality of that and feel your body for a moment, just where the kinks are. You can really find it fast in your face and in your jaw and around your eyes. Sometimes our breathing is a clue. If we're breathing kind of shallow, we just allow. We allow our breath to deepen. There may be distractions, so allow yourself to come present. Now I'm going to invite you to hold your hand in front of you. Just hold your right hand, if that's your dominant hand, or your left hand, whichever one is the one that is, you would call, your active hand. And look at your palm. You're looking at a model that's used by old shamans, and you're looking at a model that's used by neurosurgeons and neurologists and neurophysiologists. You're looking at a hologram for how you are organized. Your wrist and your arm is like your spinal cord. The base of your palm is like your metabolic brain. We used to call it the reptilian brain, but now we call it the metabolic brain, since reptilian overlords have taken over our government. That's a joke. But it's called the metabolic brain. It's the base of your palm. Your thumb, I invite you to put your thumb into the center of your palm and just rest it gently there. That is your limbic brain. And in your fingers that are now sticking out the top, fold over this, making a very gentle fist. Okay, so now that you've done that, okay, open that one more time, and then let's in our old language, the metabolic brain was called the world of the underworld, the world of the snake. The limbic brain, tucked into the center of our brain, is called the world of the jaguar or the wolf. That's the tribal affiliations that we have with each other, our connectedness. And then the fingers folded over, that's the neocortex. That's the world of the eagle. So this is called the triune brain. I didn't invent it. It's how we are organized. You have a three-part brain formed of metabolic, limbic, and neocortical. This is the world of the snake, the body functions, the jaguar, the family, tribe, friends, and the neocortex, the eagle, your intelligence. So this is a hologram. It's a model of how you're constructed. So now how do we live our lives? I'm going to invite you again to look at your hand, put your thumb in the middle, put your fingers over, and this time, please don't break your thumb or hurt yourself, but contract this to the point where it is a tightly contracted fist. That chronic contraction is what we live in. We live in a state of investment in defensive structures, protecting us from the frightening things of the world. This contraction is we've been coached to be compliant and complacent and obedient and exploitable and expendable. We've become disempowered. This contraction is the state of shared anxiety that we call civilization. And to live in this state of chronic contraction, you can feel now, if you're holding that contraction, that nothing is circulating. There's not blood flow. And this fist is really good for hitting, but it's not good for much else, right? I mean, in terms of relationships, there, it's the reactive world. It's the reactive realm of reactions, of hitting and pushing and adversarial relationships. Now that you've held this for a while, relax your hand, but don't open it. Okay? That is not enough of a dynamic range for your life. Of course, you are innately designed to gently, now you'll feel some resistance because you've been holding this in a tight contraction. Open your fingers and begin to wiggle them. Okay, now this is a fluid thing that we're going to do. Close your hand again and make the fist and realize that this structure is disempowered and less adept at dealing with the resources that are all around us because it can't see them. Now open your hand again and wiggle your fingers. This open field of you as an open being with your body gut intelligence present and your heart open, not guarded or protected, and your protected by your agility, not by contraction. And then finally, your innate intelligence, open and receptive to see the big picture. You are a magical being when you are in this open state. It's the same you that was in the contracted state that is now in the open state. So now let's see how you feel just from having done that. This is just an experiment in creating some flow and from moving into a place where energy begins to move. Now that you have that open hand, the first thing you do with your open, agile, creative, resourceful, responsive self is bring your hand to your heart. Because the guarded heart, the heartbreak and the heartache that is why we're here, why from heartache to joy is our path, is that the contraction, we contract ourselves to guard our hearts from the pain and the distress of the systems that we're living in, but we're being called to emerge as magical beings. And when you connect with your heart, with your open field, you're connected with Source. I can feel it. I can see you. Your breathing is deeper. Just naturally, our faces begin to relax and our eyes soften. This connection is a flow of your own energy. You are flowing biophotonic field energy. Your rainbow body is connected with your heart, flowing energy to your heart for guidance, for awakening, for increasing. It's an investment instead of an investment in the world. It's an investment in yourself and in your own well-being. later, after we talk just a little bit more, later we will take this the next stage and we'll use this directed flow of energy as a healing modality. That'll be very simple for you to do. But when you are open and your fingers are flexing like this, you're in the realm of magic and miracles, because that's where it's normal. You see resources. Everything that you need is around you. We don't see it in the contracted state, though, but in the open state, we do.
That was so beautiful. Thank you so much, Francis. I did the whole process, and when we began, I had tightness in my jaw, and I had a little bit of restriction in my chest. And then, of course, I was involved with the fist and all of that stuff. And then at the end, when you said, now, you know, put your hand on your heart, I realized all of that was gone. What happened in there? Was there energy healing going on? Like, or was it just that the focus released that tension? What happened?
Well, this is so interesting. It's a perspective that I have, and other people that are healers see things differently. We're all looking at the same thing and describing it a little differently. But in my view, your energetic flow connection with your heart activates the gift of who you are in ways that don't exist in our consciousness, which only operates at 40 bits a second, by the way. But it accesses the field of awareness that operates at 40 million bits a second. You access your own magical, miracle capable being when you flow your energy to your heart. From that agility, I feel we have the capacity to heal, and we'll do that a little bit later. I just wanted to get our energy flowing. Some people put the healing of others first. Well, of course, healers all know that we're not the ones who heal. It's something that happens inside of the person that actually connects or begins to flow. But this starts with us. When we make this connection, we're capable of healing ourselves and others.
That is beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I can't wait for the second part of this process.
Okay.
But tell me also about when you mentioned that, okay, that we move from heartache to joy and then back to heartache and then back to joy. How do you possibly create a life of balance and happiness in that kind of world?
I see that movement, and this is language again, and I'd like to maybe upgrade my language, because I do see that there is a definite movement that we just made from heartache to joy, from contraction. Let's call heartache the chronic contraction of stress and distress that we live our lives in, to joy, the open, agile being. Now, you can be joyful and still have things that you're dealing with, of course, and you can be contracted and still have dreams. So I would call heartache that contracted state. I think that what we, and I don't advocate that we return to that. I like the agile state. But if I relanguage it, I would say from heartbreak to joy, because I think that being here on our planet, I mean, just when you mentioned the oppressed women of our world, my heart breaks at that, because I know that the intelligence of the women of our world, the caring and compassion of women of our world, it is the ticket to creating heaven on earth, to reshaping everything, our civilizations, our investments of energy, of life. When, you know, in that book called Drawdown, which is about the solutions around 100 solutions around the world, for how can we restructure our world? The number five out of 100 was educate girls. If you educate girls, girls educate their children, and educated children educate their children, and you create a vibrational state of awareness and unexploitability. I mean, really, that's what we're talking about doing, is creating people that are, you know, creative and agile and resourceful. That's what we need right now. So heartbreak, our hearts are broken, and that's a place where the grief that we experience in the shamanic world, we see grief as being the left foot and joy as being the right foot. And when you experience the grief of the world, which is the truth of the ephemeral, ever-changing nature of what we lose, We lose those we love. We lose our grandparents, our parents. We lose our pets. We lose our friends. We lose our lovers. We lose our beloveds, and life somehow goes on, and it's incomprehensible. But in that grief, when we really allow ourselves to feel it, we recognize the preciousness of each moment. Like, I'm recognizing the preciousness of this moment with you. I'm recognizing the preciousness of this moment with everyone who is here with us. And in this preciousness and the joy of knowing that we are here together in this moment, I move to joy. So joy is my right foot. Now I'm stepping on it. But then to move, I have to acknowledge the heartbreak that I'm emerging from, that the light is shining through my heart. And then I move back to joy. So from grief to joy is motion of a real human being who really deeply experiences. Mm-hmm. From this, compassion for others comes.
Yes.
Because we experience our own grief and our own joy. So I would say that heartache to joy is the path I would like everyone to take. Please, let's open to the joy of life, but also let's acknowledge the reality of the grief and that we all share and that we all experience. And let's allow that to inform us how precious this moment with each of us is.
Wow, this is so profound. It's 10 years ago I launched this telesummit. So many people told me not to use this title for my telesummit, From Heartache to Joy. And again, because I sense things, I had such a strong connection with it. So this is the first time in 10 years that I've actually understood why I connected so strongly to this title. Thank you so much for that, Francis. Because I just sensed it, that it's really, really important that I keep the name the way it is. And I just refuse to change it. But it's very interesting.
It's a beacon.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. That is just amazing. Wow. There has been just how this, I can't believe time literally just flew by. And I want to talk about your offer. And then I know we're going to do the step number two of that process, the beautiful process that you introduced. But I would love for our listeners to find out how they can connect deeper with you and how that can actually help them in their life struggles, whatever they're going through. And you have very kindly brought to us an offer where people will have a chance to get a session with you. And we have only 20 available, you guys, so just know that, please. The link is, I'll announce the URL. Most of you have the link, so you can click on it. It's orderjoy2020.com/Francis23. And when you get to the page, this is Practical Magic, Step into the Realm of Expansive Possibilities and Creative Alternatives, 90-minute one-on-one session plus a 30-minute follow-up session available for only 20 lucky FHTJ community members. So if you can tell us, Francis, what happens in a session, how can people benefit from it, I would really appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, thank you. The reason for a session and a follow-up is that this process, this that I enter into with you, it's oriented in shift and transition and results. And I'm not happy to just offer a session and have you experience it and then you go on with your life. Because what we actually do is we together move out of that realm where problems seem unsolvable, dilemmas haunt us, things are difficult in our lives, and we have challenges that we're facing. And it's in every realm of our experience. It can be physical, of course. It can be emotional in our relationship, and it's relationship-based. And it's everything from employment to abundance to relationships, all of that. We end up in a contraction where we don't see the magical and miraculous aspects that surround us. So what I do is I help you make direct contact with this unseen guidance that we touched in on when you touched your heart. I don't use I don't use a modality. I don't make you jump through hoops. I don't make you chant. I don't make you do anything. It's not about the shamanic history or modalities. We're absolutely working together in the present moment where spirit is alive. And I know from all my experience that the guidance that comes from within you and the resources that surround you allow you to move from problems to circumstances that you're able to adjust. You're able to become really creative and resourceful in your life. So we draw on that innate intelligence that's at the core of life itself and you of your life, and we bring practical solutions. Now, I follow that up by making sure that the solutions that we work with work, and that I would call it a session with an energetic tune-up. You don't have to believe anything about shamanism or anything for this to work, because we're not dealing in the world of language or definitions. We're dealing in the world of emerging solutions and the emerging gifts of you, and calling them present, having you experience them, and having you begin to use them in your lives. You become resourceful because you've tapped into the source. So that's what sessions are about, and that's why I like doing a follow-up, because I want to make sure that this works for you.
That is so beautiful. Thank you for this awesome offer. Who do you think this would be useful for? If you can kind of give me some of the most common problems that people bring to you, like, is this good for someone going through health issues, relationship issues? What about abundance? I know that's like really on the top of people's minds these days. Abundance is number one. So what right. do these sessions really work well for?
Well, in each of the things that you've mentioned, relationships, emotional things, physical things, flow of abundance, the common denominator to them is contraction. It's the lack of access to our own agility. The flow of abundance around us is radiant, overwhelming. We live in fields of glorious light. We live everything we possibly could need surrounds us, but we don't see it because we're contracted. So the contraction and moving out of contraction into the agility of finding the resources around you and employing your gifts, that almost is the core of each of these. But I have to tell you that what I've seen is that an awful lot of people have done a lot of work. I mean, everyone has done so much reading and so much research, and hearts are so longing for solutions, and yet things haven't changed. And they haven't really changed. We may be, making some magical incantations about abundance or something, but it's not really happening. So one of the key things that is offered is that in these different realms of your dimensionality, in your awareness, in your body, in your sense of flow in your life, in your relationship with spirit, in each of these areas, there is the capacity to have your perceptual field open so that you see the resources that are available. And that place of centrality in your own multidimensionality is a place of incredible empowerment. And I'm using disempowerment is when you are contracted and not able to access your own resources. Empowerment isn't the kind of power that we see people wielding in the world. Empowerment is open, resourceful, and responsiveness to your own gifts. When those come forward and present, life changes for you.
It's like that closed fist versus the open palm. So,
yeah, your open hand is so much more capable.
Yeah,
So a lot of people also, and I have to tell you, I have a lot of shamans and a lot of other practitioners and healers that I work with. One of the groups of people I'm working with now that seems to have come up is I work with psychiatrists and psychotherapists and therapists and doctors and people and nurses, people in the medical profession, because they're disheartened and discouraged. And with the slow pace of change in so many ways, and they're discovering
anxiety and depression are at an all-time high with no real medication to support the patients, you know?
Yes, that's it. And meanwhile, the flow of resources and abundance and the turning on of an access to our own well of wellness is so close, and it's so available to us. So my hope here is that, and this is what's happened when I work with people, then their gift is a gift that they give to life itself, and that creates a flow of benefit that I call, personally, the way I feel it, it's a path of mutual benefit. By benefiting yourself and allowing yourself to experience your own magical creativity, you become the one who is able to ignite that in others. So it's a way of, it's important to me that we all begin to share this enjoyment of life.
Beautiful. Yes. I love that. Yeah. So the invitation is, those of you that resonate with this beautiful, magical being that we have here with us today, go to orderjoy2020.com/Francis23 and reserve your spot and have this beautiful, magical experience, because, oh boy, this is so exciting. And we have only 20 of these, so remember, don't wait too long because you might miss out. So, Francis, going back to the process that we were going to do, because we're almost at 60 minutes, and
okay,
we have maybe another 15 minutes left. Is that going to be enough time?
Oh, more than enough. Yes, we can do this
Okay, perfect.
Now. We're in the present moment with each other. So now, remember, we are looking at our hands as a hologram. It's like we're in a dream. We're actually assembling our reality around us, and we're co-creating life as we experience it. And when you're looking at your hand, you're cracking, it's a crack in the cosmic egg, because you're looking at something that is a model of your own energy. And what we did previously is we linked the flow of your biophotonic field, the flow of your vibrant rainbow body, with this hologram image that is real. It's your hand, but now it's your hand in light, and it reached to your heart, and it made a connection that created a spiral of energy that vortexed from you into your heart. So now we're going to use both of our hands. And so bring both hands forward. Look at your palms. So there you are. You've got your wrists. You've got the base of your palms, your metabolic being, your thumbs. If you wiggle them, that's your limbic brain, that place where energetic patterns are stored. And it's the next evolutionary outgrowth from the metabolic. And then there are your fingers. So let's make the contracted fist. Now, we contract and expand all the time. So one of the things that you're going to be doing is putting your neuroplasticity, your capacity to do things differently, on notice, that when you're faced by a challenge, when you're faced by a difficulty, instead of contracting and guarding and moving into a defended protective position, you're going to open to the present moment, and you're going to open with love, you're going to open with resourcefulness, and then we are going to take that capacity, the openness in the present moment, and we're going to direct the flow of your energy first to care for you, and then you'll be able to use that care that you've given yourself for the world. So now we're looking at our hands. Put your thumbs in the middle of your palms. Okay, gently now, bring your fingers over so that you've got two fists. You're looking at them with your thumbs inside of your fingers. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now let's just recognize that we're being challenged by fear all the time, and that fear causes us to contract. And it's a natural thing to be frightened, but of something, like a lion roaring at you, or you know, just being almost hit by a bus or something. So it's not that fear is bad. It's the state of constant contraction, chronic contraction. Now let's go ahead and experience that by making these fists tighter. so that we are contracting. This is not the most resourceful way for us to live our lives. We can't go through our lives being this contracted being. And yet that's what we see all around us. In shamanic terms, we call this the trance, when you think that this is reality. But you are innately designed to open to the present moment. So let's go ahead and gently wiggle your fingers just as you're opening them and open your hands. Bring your dominant hand, perhaps it's your right hand or your left hand. Bring that right hand to your heart and bring the left hand over it. So now what you're doing is your action. You've come to the present moment and you've brought your active part of you to your heart for guidance. The receptive part of you, your non-dominant hand, that normally holds the compromises and accommodations of the world, you're bringing that in support of the action of connecting with Source. Now you have a very powerful biophotonic field flowing of active energy and receptive energy that are combined in one action of coming to your heart. So instead of the defended, protected heart that is frightened and hurt and injured, the heart that is heartache, instead of heartache, we've moved to a place of connection with the flow of the joy of being alive. Okay, now I'm looking, I'm feeling into each of you and seeing, okay, the connection gets a little unsteady at first. Okay, we're going to leave your right hand on your heart or your dominant hand on your heart and allow your left hand, your non-dominant hand, to slide down your belly to below your belly button. Okay, now, if you look at yourself for a moment, excuse me, you've got a double helix. You've got a double spiral. You've got energy flowing from your body around your right hand into your heart, and you've got energy flowing around your body from your left hand down into the deep intelligence of your gut of being. There's actually a neurology there. Your gut is intelligent, so is your heart, and so are you. So you've got a double helix going. What you're doing right now is you're creating coherent, harmonized energy between active and receptive aspects of yourself. We could limit this and say it's masculine and feminine, but that's not what it is. It really is your capacity to act and your capacity to receive, and you're creating harmony. This is not about balance. This is harmony. Okay, now you're flowing your own biophotonic field. You guys are looking good. Okay, now slide that left hand back up to your heart. Now we have a flow of energy. You know, people do Qigong to try to achieve this, and you are doing it just because you are open to the present moment with love, without fear, connected to Source, without compromise of who you are. Instead of holding the compromises, you're holding your capacity to reach into your own heart, into the gift of your life. Now, let's take that. For some of you, well, let's just explore for just a really quick moment. Move this up. Move both hands up. Just have them slide up to your throat. One of the things I really encourage women to do is to support. This is your thyroid and parathyroid. By the way, you can use this practice to reverse aging. I'll share that with you sometime. But to be able to speak your truth without it sounding shrill or harsh or forced or trying to cut through the noise of the world, to know that your voice will be heard because you are speaking the gift. This is what you support. Go ahead and slide this on up further to your pituitary, right above, to your third eye. This place where your pineal gland is, you're actually sending light to your biophysiological, neurological field. You're sending coherent, harmonized light energy. So now you have your hands on your forehead, your right hand's to your forehead, your left hand is holding that in place, and you are sending energy to the place of profound connectedness with the imaginal realm. You will find in the next couple of days, if you do this little practice, that you begin to see the synchronicities of life begin to multiply. And as you spot synchronicities where beneficial things begin to occur for you, synchronicities are spotting you as someone who is awake and attending to the flow of life. This is because the big spiral of your pineal gland, there's more there to talk about. When I look at people in sessions, I can see these flows of energy and we can address them and get flow happening where there's contraction. But you're doing it yourself right now. So go ahead and slide it back down past your throat to your heart. Bring it down to your belly. This is that gut intelligence. It's not intuition. It is feral. It is you as a creature. It's you are creation's gift. And in this place of deep intelligence is trust of yourself and what you know and what you see and what you feel. And there's a lot of healing that happens along the way physically that happens after this ignition. That's been my experience. Okay, let's bring our hands back up to our heart. Both hands. Okay, bring your left hand, holding your right hand on your heart. Bring your left hand, let it slide down to your belly. I just want, again, just restore this coherence and harmony of flows of light. Remember, you are a light being. You're like Iram's grandfather. We are the same this way. This is a great gift that you are a magical being. Okay, just relax. Deep breath. Shake your fingers. Let this go. You don't have to hold on to anything. Okay, we're good. Now, I just want to review with you that you can do this by yourself. You look at your hand. You make that fist with your thumb on the inside. When you're challenged by something, hopefully something little that you can deal with, you say, in the face of challenge, I open to the present moment with love, right hand to heart, without fear. Bring your left hand to support. That is a direction of your own biophotonic field that ignites coherence and harmony within you. And it's the gift of you that is not special, but essential.
You are
the gift. Thank you, Erin.
Thank you. That was so, so, so beautiful and very powerful energy. I am really surprised at how powerful the energy flow was. I could feel it every time that you asked us to move the hand to a different place. I felt it very strongly.
But, well, you are a grandchild of your grandfather. Yeah.
Yes, and I need to kind of open up to all these probably genetic stuff that I have in me that I resisted for a long time. Yeah. But this was so amazing, truly magical. I just enjoyed our time so much, Francis. This was so lovely, and I thank you again for taking the time away from your family for your vacation to talk to us today. It was just such a joy and such a gift. Absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
And we can't wait to, you know, talk to you again, maybe a follow-up call on some of the topics we didn't get to touch today. But it was a pleasure, and I want to thank our listeners as well for being here today. It was such a beautiful call. Thanks to all of you guys, too, because remember, we are all touching each other energetically, and this would not have manifested in such a beautiful way without you guys being present, whether you're on the live call right now or we'll listen to the replay later. Thank you so much, all of you guys as well, and thank you again, Francis.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you so much for being there. I could really feel, I could feel your presence. And Iram, thank you so much. You are You are an inspiration, and you are evidence of creation's intelligence and love, loving, caring, the life-affirming love of life for life. You are evidence of that. So I so appreciate being
Thank
able
you.
To be here with
Thank
you.
You.
Thank you.
Very humbled and grateful. Thank you, and lots of love to you guys as well. Take care for now, and bye-bye.